The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today Chris Offutt. He joins us on the telephone in, are you in Mississippi?
Yep, outside of Oxford, Mississippi.
All righty. As we're recording this interview, you have a new book just came out today. It's the second book in your Mick Harden novels. It's called Shifty's Boys, and I saw somewhere where you're planning a trilogy. Is that the plan?
That's the current plan. There is a third book with the publisher now. I sent it off, a final draft yesterday. So
nice.
We'll see. I've started a fourth, but who knows what's going to happen.
Okay.
So it's at least a trilogy, and it was kind of designed that this third book could either be the end of the trilogy or set up for another one.
Tricky. I can only imagine how you could do that. Okay. Well, we had you on for the first book, and I really enjoyed the first book. It's called The Killing Hills, and now Mick Harden has returned for Shifty's Boys. Tell us, who is this guy?
Mick Harden is a native of eastern Kentucky. He grew up in the woods, raised by his grandfather deep in the woods, who then left home when he was 18 by joining the U.S. Army, was involved in as a combat paratrooper, then switched to CID, which is the Criminal Investigation Division within the Army, investigating felonies that either occur on base or by soldiers, and has been in the service, I think, at the point of this book, about 18 years maybe. And has gotten wounded and is back home to recuperate. And, here he is back home, and he gets mixed up in a murder.
Mm-hmm. And in the first book, he was back home. And on that one, he was going AWOL. He got tied up in an investigation, and he really doesn't have a status as an investigator, but because of his relationship with his sister, he somehow gets drawn into these.
Well, his sister in the first book had just become the sheriff of the county where they live, and it was the first female sheriff, and as such had drawn, a lot of the ire of all the male authority in the community, the first female sheriff in county history, and one of the very first in real terms in the hills. So Mick happened to be there, and he helped her with that first investigation. Now he's back home to recuperate and is staying at her house. And she is the sheriff now, and has gained respect and from the county, and is forced to run for office. It's an elected position, the sheriff. So she's running for office while Mick is recuperating, and then he gets drawn into this murder investigation of simply because the mother of the victim just asks him to help, because she's dissatisfied with the police. So he agrees to help her.
And the mother is Shifty, and he was one of Shifty's boys that got killed. He was a drug dealer.
Yeah, Shifty Kissick. She was had been a paramour of Mick's father, like 30, 40 years ago, or something like that. And her son had appeared in the first the book, and then in the second one, he's the murder victim, and Shifty has She had five kids. One had had died in a car wreck a long time ago, and then three sons and a daughter who moved away. And she has one son there who's living with her, Mason. One dead son now, Barney, and then the other another son comes in from California after for his brother's funeral, and then sticks around. And he and Mick kind of hit it off and worked together to figure out who killed Barney and why.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that coalition between those two, that's really one of the highlights of the book when you bring those two together. My guest is Chris Offutt, and we're talking about Shifty's Boys. As that first book opened, The Killing Hills, we find Mick home on leave, and he's not usually a big drinker, but when he does drink, he drinks a lot, and he's basically killing the pain because his marriage has fallen apart. And that storyline continues in this new book.
Right, it does. And well, the storyline with his marriage has the finality in this.
I think readers are going to love Shifty. Tell us a little bit more about her. She's a tough gal.
I mean, she's very tough. She's sort of modeled after some women that I knew when I was growing up in the hills of Kentucky. You know, women are the backbones of the families in many ways, simply because there's so little employment and the men are, most of the jobs are for men. And, you know, unemployed men have produces their own difficulties. So women can often hold things together and are ultimately the power in the families, even if there's the secret power. And the children always revere the mother in some ways more than the father. They'll follow the father's instructions, but they'll carry out the mother's orders. And Shifty has lived all her life there. She left that county once to go to Lexington for a Wildcats basketball game. Uh-huh. Didn't like it and never went back. She also always carries a small pistol with the sights are filed off so it won't snag on her clothes. And she got her nickname Shifty because when she got married, all she owned to wear were a kind of a sleeveless dress called a shift that her mother had made.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they still call them shifts anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Shifty's Boys. Chris Offutt wrote it, just being published. And
yep.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. It's the Book Nook. And you are a product of Kentucky. You're writing what you know, huh?
Well, yes. I grew up in essentially where these novels take place. I mean, there's a lot of imaginary shifts, of course, for fiction, but it's the world that I grew up in, and I know how the people think. I know all the wildlife and flora that are there, all the trees, and I love writing these books because it allows me to go home every day, even though I live a long ways away. It's you know, a lot of people who grew up in Eastern Kentucky either stay or leave. I mean, that's it. And there's just not much returning to it. And I get homesick, but I can go back home every morning, in my mind anyway.
Uh-huh.
And as I love writing them. And also, you know, Mick Harden is the lead character, in conjunction with his sister, and then in this book with Shifty's son Raymond. But my stance as I write is that the protagonist of these novels is the culture of the hills and the land. And even though we're following Mick Harden as he just kind of drives around and talks to people pretty
uh-huh.
much, my thinking is I'm going to try to portray the way life in the hills actually is, rather than the popular depictions of it in books and movies. That often get it wrong, in my opinion.
Well, I loved the first book in this series, The Killing Hills. And then when I read Shipty's Boys, I was pleasantly surprised, for one thing, because you followed the other book up so quickly, which, knowing your work, I wasn't accustomed to you putting out another book so fast. It seems like there's usually a little wider gap. But I can see how, if you're writing what people like to call a crime novel, how you kind of get into that rhythm of putting out another book. And I thought, man, he is really hitting it with the second book. I mean, it just flew.
Thanks, man. I mean, part of it, frankly, had to do with the lockdown, the quarantine. Mm-hmm. I had a lot more time to myself. I'd been teaching college, and we were suddenly teaching on Zoom, which was problematic, but I adjusted to it. The students adjusted to it, and then there just really wasn't a lot else to do. And I loved writing The Killing Hills, and I love these people so much. I needed company of them, you know, because I was unable to see a lot of other people during that time, family and friends. And so these, you know, you mentioned that it was fast. Yeah, it was, I don't think I wrote it fast, but I just wrote it steadily because I missed them. I was lonely for these people, you know?
Yeah.
I never think of them as imaginary characters, though they are. They're just the people that I go hang out with every day and see what they do and what they say and how they respond to problems that arise.
Yeah. I'll almost always, if I really like a book, I'll pick out a peripheral character who I really like, who maybe will just make a little cameo appearance. And in this book, you had this guy who gets recruited to fix Mick's truck. And he's such a great character. How'd you get the idea for this guy?
I don't really know. I just I realized that Mick's truck had sat his grandfather's old pickup truck had sat for a long time, and he needed to get around. And it occurred to me that, well, you know, an old truck is going to need repairs. He can't do it. And then it just kind of developed that Johnny Boy, the deputy's cousin, might be able to do it. And as I wrote, his name is Jackie. Jackie sort of just became this really, really interesting character. My belief when I write is that if I try to bring somebody to life on the page, even if they're a secondary or tertiary character, not, you know, ultimately not that important, they still deserve as much life as possible.
Mm-hmm.
On the page. And the more I wrote about Jackie, the more I just loved him. You know, I mean, he's a really interesting character. And I had seen, he's sort of a backwoods inventor. And I had known a couple of guys who came up with inventions and in the past. And I'd always been enamored by that. I knew a guy, I grew up with a guy who was very proud of he gave me an arrowhead that he had made out of, not an actual arrowhead, but he'd used an arrowhead to make a cast, you know, I forgot the metal, maybe brass mold of it that I could wear, that I could just have it. He was very proud of it. And he explained to me how he made this. And I realized that what he was describing was what's known as the lost wax technique.
Oh.
And he had invented it in, you know, the late 20th century. But it had been around for a long, long time. He just wasn't aware of it. And so it was that kind of thinking that I just loved, the resourcefulness of it, the direct application of idea to materials. And so Jackie is, I mean, he doesn't do that kind of thing, but he's that sort of character who's interested in trying to invent something, even if it's already been around.
He reinvented it on his own.
You mean my friend?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He discovered it and didn't know that it had been around for a long time. And, you know, I love that because it also points to the isolation of the people who live in these hills, you know, and the lack of access to, information. That may have changed now with the computer, and this was, you know, before the internet took over. But I just was enamored by my friend's discovery of something that had been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and thought, well, maybe Jackie Turner could be a version of that with his inventions.
When I read a book by a writer who I really respect and I'm enjoying the book, I often will think of other books and other writers and wonder, did this writer read such and such book because this reminds me a little bit of such and such book? And when I read your stuff, I am sometimes reminded of a memoir called A Childhood, The Biography of a Place by Harry Cruz.
Yeah.
I think to myself, I'll bet you Offutt read Cruz.
Well, I think that book is one of his best. And yes, I've read that book. And I think Cruz is a pretty good writer, very prolific. There's another one that I really loved of his, a novel, but that I did read that memoir quite a while ago. There's a directness to his approach, and it's a harsh world that he grew up in and writes about, similar to mine, I guess. But I try to not reduce the harshness, but also make sure that the reader recognizes that this is an unbelievably gorgeous environment that where it's taking place, and I try to do that with through nature and birds and flowers and all. There's another few other writers I like along. James Lee Burke. His when he writes about weather, it's amazing. That's something I've studied. His descriptions of weather. I love Walter Moseley. I mean, I could go on and on about the writers who've inspired me. Is there another one that you were thinking of besides Cruz?
Well, I can see James Lee Burke for sure. I just did my 21st interview with him the other day.
How's he doing?
You know, it's the best he's sounded in the last several years. We've done about 14 in a row with him, for like 14 books in a row, and he didn't sound so hot the last couple, but this time he sounded pretty darn good for a guy in his mid-80s.
I'm glad. I met him a long time ago. He was an incredibly generous and kind man.
He really is.
Very compassionate.
I agree, and his social justice stands in every book. That is so important to him. You asked if I had any other authors that maybe I'm reminded of. I had to think of Larry Brown.
Well, I mean, I love Larry Brown. He and I started corresponding maybe 20 some years ago. And, you know, he blurred my first book, and I think I'd suggested him because I'd read his stuff. And at that time, there really wasn't a lot of writers writing about the rural world, the deep rural world. And Larry was. And then, I would come down to Mississippi. That was before I moved here, and go fishing and just hang out with Larry.
You did? Wow.
Yeah. I learned from him. I learned from him quite a bit. And again, there was a direct approach that he had with his writing, and he did not, he had respect for all of his characters. And that was something that was important to me, especially in Southern rural writing. You know, not everyone brings that sort of respect to the characters, and he did. And Larry is a beloved figure here, you know. I know his son now. His son runs a dairy. I drink his milk.
Really?
Yeah.
That's right. You're writing Larry Brown country down there, and it was such a shock when I didn't know what he died from, but when he died, I thought, oh, man, he was so young.
He was pretty young. He died in his sleep.
Oh. Well, I've read all his stuff, and he's one of my favorites.
He's terrific. Yeah. I mean, I think what he could have given us if he had lived longer. I think that's the same way about Bruce Pancake. He died, you know, his book was published, his one book was published posthumously.
Mm.
You ever read him?
No.
West Virginia writer from probably the 70s, I think.
What was his name again?
Brees.
Uh-huh.
Breece. Pancake.
Pancake? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Brees Pancake.
Haven't read him. Thanks for the tip.
He has a book of short stories called Trilobites that was the first book I read about the world where I lived.
Mm.
That's because he was probably a few years older than me. Prior to that, his book and then mine, most of the work that was set in the Appalachian foothills in the east there was set, you know, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Mm.
And there's some good books, but the world that they were showing changed drastically with the completion of the interstate system. The final leg was through Appalachia, the war on poverty, which upended everything and turned out to be more of a skirmish that was not particularly helpful to the people, and the Vietnam War, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like all these things. And then, you know, then cable TV and then the internet. So there's just been this very late progression into modernity there, and sudden. So I like Pancake because he was writing about the same world that I knew after all of these things had occurred.
I'm going to dig that one up. I really appreciate the tip.
Yeah, he's a good writer.
My guest is Chris Offutt, and his new one is Shifty's Boys. There's one other guy I'd like to mention, and he's one of my favorite writers, and he's out of Southeast Ohio, and that's Donald Ray Pollock.
Yeah, I've read all of Pollock's work. I wish he'd write a little bit more. I met him once, and, you know, we read some sort of event, and we just kind of shook hands, acknowledged each other, and kept on going.
Uh-huh.
Really a nice guy and a very strong writer.
Well, that he keeps... the Knock 'Em Stiff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really loved that book.
Well, he sweated every word in that one. You can tell.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's the mark of a good writer.
Yeah.
You know, he cared about language, and there's a precision to it, which, you know, if somebody cares about language, I don't care what their subject matter is, but if they're trying to be precise, then I'm going to just gobble it up.
Uh-huh.
And see what I can learn. My reading is constantly to learn.
Well,
By that, I don't mean read nonfiction to learn, you know, how to do this or that, but I mean, I read, the fiction I read is just to learn from each of these good writers what I can, how I can improve. I'm constantly doing that. I'm rereading John le Carré right now, which I hadn't read in 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's another master, I think. And Jean Rhys, I don't know if you know her work. She's probably one of my all-time favorites, her and Joan Didion, actually. Jean Rhys is a British writer.
R-H-Y-S?
R-H-Y-S.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm familiar with her.
She's known for The Wide Sargasso Sea, but there were about three novels that she published 20 years before, which I think are just fantastic, and they had a tremendous influence on me.
Hmm. Nice. Well, I love talking books with the people who write them. And my guest is Chris Offutt, and Shifty's Boys is his new Mick Harden novel. And we need to talk a little bit more about this just to pique readers' interest. Let's imagine for a moment that you're standing in a bookstore and you've just gotten done signing stock. You were out on a big book tour and... then you're browsing around in a bookstore and you see somebody that you don't know and they walk up to your book and they're looking at it. What would you say to them to try to maybe pique their interest and make them want to read it?
I mean, if they're like a stranger is holding the book and
yeah.
And I see them?
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know, man. I don't know if I would, I don't know if I feel comfortable just walking up and saying, hey, man, I wrote that book. You better go buy it right now. You know, I don't want to put pressure on anybody to do anything, really. I try to avoid that situation.
Okay.
I guess if I, you know, if someone asked me about it or something, maybe I would. I just tell them that I think it's fast moving. I try to include humor, which I think is important. But humor within dialogue, turn of phrase, rather than humor that makes fun of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's way too much of that in the world, and I avoid that. But I think that humor is important, and it's a big part of the Appalachian culture. People love to laugh, you know, and because everything is, there's an absurdity that is acknowledged and recognized. So, you know, that I hope makes its way into these books. And that McCartan is someone who always does his best. And if he can help somebody, he will drop everything to help them. And that is a big part of the Appalachian culture as well. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If you need help, somebody will help you, even if it means not doing what they should be doing. Because there's just so few people and they're so isolated for so long. And everyone has wound up helping each other along the ways. And it all comes out in the wash. And in the meantime, of course, you know, he gets to the bottom of the murder case and things get more and more complicated. And people don't want him to get to the bottom of it, which makes more complexities as well. How's that?
Sounds good, Chris. I love the way we start off with this murder and we've got this drug dealer and nobody cares about him except his mother, and Mick gets drawn into this, and it leads us to this really ominous, scary, incredible situation in which we have one of Shifty's boys go into this area with Mick, and they really have some wild action, and it's just pretty incredible.
The place where this incredible action that you referred to occurs, that's all real.
Oh, boy.
And you can just pull it up on Google and say, oh, wow, I see where Chris Offit stole this.
Oh.
But I made up the rest of it. Yeah, that was my idea, was to just sort of see where this goes. And then the more it developed, I thought, geez, this thing is getting bigger and bigger. And then I was in a position that I'd never been. There was a big prolonged action scene with multiple people, and I had never written anything like that. So I thought, well, I hope I can do it. Let's see. And I tried and kept working. And I don't know, did the best I could.
I think you paid off there. I think for any reader, they're going to go, wow, after they read that. That's just, it's great.
Well, thank you. My goal was to make it not be confusing,
mm-hmm.
and to, because there was a lot going on, and be simple enough to where it was could follow it, but understand that it was a complex situation. I mean, I guess I'm talking real vaguely because I don't want to give anything away. But
sure.
I tried it and it worked out, and I really liked doing it.
Well, Chris, we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure, man. I enjoyed it last time, and I hope we can do it again next year when book 3 comes out, which is tentatively titled Code of the Hills.
Excellent. Well, I hope we can, too. My guest has been Chris Offit, and the new one is Shifty's Boys. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.